Let Sing and Swing.
Evening visit with Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt.
2 o'clock on Thursday afternoon in Manila.
Forbidden Diary, the true World War II story of Natalie Crowther, based on her secret journal written from a Japanese prison camp in the Philippines. Episode 18, Our Camp. Previously on Forbidden Diary.
First Italy, then Germany in 6 months, and maybe Japan a year from now. Man, I'll be glad to get the hell out of here.
Don't you Americans like it in here?
No, Mr. Hayakawa.
Well, neither do we.
August 7, 1942. It's been a week since the tragic confirmation of Rufus Gray's death. Rufus was killed from third-degree questioning and torture.
And now, Episode 18.
September 27, 1943. Out of the blue, the Japanese finally gave us permission to write home. Word spread through camp, and I sent my first letter to Mother since the war and signed it, Your Devoted Daughter, number 87. It was a mad, wild, hectic day, typing letters all day long, the air crackling with typewriters and people letting out their emotions. I typed 32 letters for people, and by 5 o'clock was tired and almost ready to weep after looking into the hearts of the camp in letters.
Dear Mother, it's been so long that it now seems incredible that we may write.
I'm still not very thin. We purchase extra food when we can afford it.
And in my leisure time, I study New Testament Greek. On the whole, I'd say our treatment has been fair and considerate.
Am I an aunt? When you write, you'll be sure to tell me about the nieces and nephews.
Someday, this will all be behind us.
We have classes in Chinese, Japanese, Latin, Greek, German, Spanish, French, English, Ilocano, Tagalog, accounting, higher mathematics, architecture, and Japanese flower arrangement.
I feel I have had a small share with you in this changed world. I realize I shall not return and find things as I left it.
I have a pan made from part of a safe. And a brooch with my name and prison number made from a loudspeaker, of all things.
14 babies born, almost 2 years old now. 3 men died, one was 83 years old.
We line up for meals, store, and even the toilet.
Only a very few possessions are still with us. All else is gone.
Someday we'll have a great family reunion. We try to look forward.
We're soon entering our third year. Fortunately, there's no censorship on thought, which goes out to you often.
Many who used to drink alcohol now speak of improved health and are in far better condition in spite of hardships. They don't mention that it's a lack of stimulants or that regular hours of sleep and outdoor life with hard work help to keep us in condition during unaccustomed rigors.
I am so thankful my husband is with me.
I've certainly learned a lot about cooking with coconuts, rice flour, and other native products.
We have poor beds, no chairs, no bathtubs, no fireplaces, no warmth of any kind.
We live an active, hurried, crowded life.
I live with many women.
My cathedral friends may like to know that I make the altar bread using two electric irons for the purpose.
Marion's son looks just like Rufus. She's done a superb job of looking after their baby all by herself.
September 28, 1943. Jerry told me a story about a Bataan prisoner and an Igorot boy, both heroes in my book. It happened during a forced prison march about 6 miles from Bontoc.
So the GI is staggering under his load and collapses on the roadside from exhaustion. The guards don't notice and hike off without him when an Igorot boy creeps out from the bushes and tells the guy he'll hide him and take care of him. But get this, the GI says no because he's a sergeant and 10 of his men will get killed if he's missing.
September 29, 1943. The camp started buzzing this morning about a prisoner exchange. By noon, it shifted to repatriation for all families. Oh, but the rumor was too good to be true. Because after second meal, Miss McKim announced that only one person would be allowed to go home. Bill Portrude won the drawing. Now that the Japanese are letting prisoners send and receive letters, we got a long note from Regina, who was interned at Los Baños prison in Manila.
And if the Japanese send you down here, bring everything you can carry. We live in separate shacks and pay for our own food. There's no community store, just private selling. And everyone cooks on their own clay stove when they can afford firewood. We eat beans every day at noon and crave fresh vegetables. We do have hot and cold water on tap, but it's a long haul carrying it, and the heat means constant washing. It's been even more dull and monotonous around here since 800 of our men were sent to another prison. We don't have any initiative down here. Maybe the heat sweated it out of us. What I wouldn't give for a cool mountain breeze. Tell people to stay in Baguio if they can, especially if they have kids.
September 30, 1943. The high school's production of Our Town was really quite good. I think I have Jim's review here somewhere.
Camp Holmes Daily News. Dear Mr. Wilder, last night, our high school presented your play, Our Town. We didn't get your permission, I'm sorry to say, but I know you will excuse us. You see, we are in a concentration camp. We have been without our freedom for nearly 21 months now. Most of us haven't had any mail in that time, and none of us have been able to send any until recently. Besides, we wouldn't have very much to pay you with, except maybe a hand of bananas, and lately they haven't been too easy to come by the way prices are going up. We had a good time last night. We depend on ourselves for entertainment these days, you know. And it's not very often we have anything quite so worthwhile as your play. Even sitting on a hard bench for 2 hours wasn't difficult. We had permission to have the lights on after 9:30. After we got out of the dining hall, we looked at the moonlight lighting up the mountains and the pine trees around here, and it didn't seem quite so hard to wait. Let us know if you want those bananas, Mr. Wilder. And thanks from Camp Holmes.
October 2nd, 1943. Our underground radio still seems to be in operation because authentics are swirling around camp about Allies' victories in Europe. Today, a rumor about Kiev falling. Even the Manila Tribune admits that the Allies have occupied Sardinia and Corsica. Mr. Hayakawa brought news from his trip taking Dr. Dean and the lucky Bill Portrude to Manila.
Here you go, honey. Submarine coffee. No sugar, no milk.
Thank you, Jerry.
Hey, I've got some fresh news hot off the Hayakawa Press.
About the repatriation ship?
How'd you know?
I live in a dorm, honey.
Well, Mr. Hayakawa told Arthur that Bill Portrude left Manila on a freighter sailing to Goa.
Western India.
Yep. Arthur said the ship holds 1,000 passengers, but they jammed 1,500 Americans on board. I guess old Bill somehow managed to get deck space on top.
It sounds like a miserable trip.
Yeah. Hey, how goes the Hundred Years' War over at the women's barracks?
Oh, you mean 1,000 years. Now, there's a campaign to get mothers to pitch in more. Mrs. Salibi was sure hot under the collar about it.
The only ones with excuses not to help with the vegetables and rice are the mothers who are teaching or have small children. The rest of them need to buck up. Their kids are fed and served twice a day, and most of the time they're either in school or being looked after on the playground. Why, you'd think we're back in Baguio before the war. So don't you tell me these women can't volunteer a measly hour and a half. If they have time to bake pies and cakes in the women's kitchen, they have time to do a few chores like the rest of us.
I told Jerry that I agreed with Mrs. Salibi, but do have to say that sharing the stove in the women's kitchen takes some orchestration and considerable time. Over 100 families use it for extra cooking. The top of the stove is first come, first served, so the burners are covered from a.m. to p.m., mostly with pots people slip in to reheat coffee. It's a miracle there aren't many more fights. For the oven, there is a schedule, allowing 2 women at a time to use the oven once a week. Yesterday morning, Millie and I had the oven. Hey, Peg, would you give me a hand?
Sure. What are you making?
Bed cookies.
What?
Bed cookies. I call them that because they're made on the bed, and I use the cookie sheet Florence stores under the baby bed. Oh, I just don't have enough hands. Would you please measure out 1 cup of rice flour for me?
Sure.
Oh, thanks. Okay, now, dump it in a little at a time while I stir. Okay. Another one, please. Oh, thanks. I'm making this batch with cocoa butter.
From Nita?
No, Jerry and I made it.
Another?
Yes, just sprinkle it on top.
How did you make the coconut butter, pray tell?
Jerry milks and strains the coconut and then lets it settle for about 3 hours. And then I scoop off the cream and shake it in a jar. Just like grade school. Remember?
I do, only we used real cream. Remember that? I'd give my firstborn for a saltine cracker with butter.
So that's the price you put on your dear child.
You didn't hear him teasing his sister last night. He takes such delight in it.
Ugh, Beatty does the same thing.
And of course everyone hears it and thinks I'm raising a wicked child.
Don't worry about it. Anyone with kids knows better. Beatty's been a rascal lately. I'm kind of glad he's living with Jerry. You heard about him getting 2 stitches from a playground fight?
Kind of.
Well, Jerry's much better at dealing with that stuff.
Gosh, I wish Walter were here.
Have you heard anything?
No, not since Mr. Matsumoto visited.
I'm sure Walter's still safe on Davao.
I suppose. Is that all you have to do to make coconut butter?
Well, there are a few more steps. After shaking it in a jar, you have to work it over and press out the whey. Jerry's also made cheese from it, if you can believe that.
He's so clever with food.
I tell you, it borders on the occult. Still, if you can't do anything with the coconut leftovers, I'd hate to toss them.
Well, they've been asking for coconut scraps at the soap factory.
Really? Oh, okay.
All right, ladies, everyone must be ready in 1/2 hour for inspections. That's 09:30. Yeah, I know. Generals Nagasaki and Sato are both visiting today, so let's look sharp.
Oh, you've got to be kidding. Oh, now I've got to stop and clean up.
You'll still make it. I'll give you a hand.
Oh, thanks, Peg. I haven't mopped the dorm and porch yet either. Why do we keep having generals visiting camp?
Natalie, it's your turn for the oven.
I'm not going to get to use the oven until next week.
Well, I say, the heck with the generals.
You know, you're right. They're always late anyway. While Peg did my cleaning, I baked cookies. It was a mad whirl of error and crumbs in every direction, which were saved to make pudding later. Of course, the generals arrived 15 minutes early, but only one sheet of cookies spoiled. October 3rd, 1943. The kids now have 2 or 3 parties a week, and there's one group that plays post office who are becoming more and more select and aggressive about it. Beatty's been in a stew for days over a pin he's making for his girlfriend, with her initials carved in ivory and painted in black. It's all he can think or talk about. After many errors, the pin was finally presented to the young lady, who wrote him a thank you note.
What's the letter say, Beatty?
Nothing. Just thanks for the pin.
Looks like more than that. Aw, come on, read it. No one's around and I won't tell.
Well, there's one part I don't get. It says, Beatty, why did you give me the pin and go away? Why not stay and talk a little bit? How am I going to do that, Dad?
You'll get a second chance. When are you going to see her again?
Tonight.
There you go.
The kids are having a scavenger hunt.
Hey, can't you kids find something else to do? Carl didn't appreciate his books dumped all over his bed.
We couldn't find him and needed something with a signature on it.
So you rifled through his stuff and took one of his books.
We didn't think he'd mind.
Actually, Beatty, he did.
Sorry, Dad. We'll look for a grapefruit or something.
Well, if you value your life, don't go scavenging in the kitchen. Chef Alex will have your head.
And that's Young Love in a Concentration Camp. I'd enjoy seeing our children's grandmothers' faces at hearing what Marge Moule said to their granddaughter the other day, spoken in typical camp lingo.
Why, June, where'd you get that lovely gardenia in your hair? You must have a boyfriend on garbage detail who can get gardenias outside of camp.
October 4, 1943. Since Miss McKim lost her translator job to Lieutenant Kira, she's been keeping herself busy teaching a class on Japanese history, using the Durant's Story of Civilization as a reference.
That's a good question, Phil. One must study their historical background to understand the Japanese, such as their legend of origin and the Emperor's divinity. You have to remember that the Japanese are born of earthquakes. The battling of natural elements has produced in them infinite patience. Their courage and bravery, ruthlessness and determination come from the samurai code. Every soldier is a gentleman, and every gentleman a soldier. Bushido, their code, calls for courage, asceticism, and self-control. The family is the real source of social order, with the father omnipotent. Now, as you recall from last week, most of Japan's art and language is from China and Korea. Shinto is the way of the gods, the domestic cult of family and ancestors, communal cult of clan ancestors, and finally, the state of ancestors. Buddhism in 522 filled the religious needs of the people and the political needs of the state. It taught piety, peacefulness, and obedience, to be content with a simple lot. Christianity came in 1549, but in 1614, the shoguns, or military, suspected political intrigue and outlawed it for 200 years. When Perry arrived in 1853, there were shoguns, the daimyo, and samurai. We also talked about how making the sword is a serious, prayerful business. Today, I'm going to talk a little more about Japan's classical Buddhist period, the Tokugawa shogunate, the most peaceful period, and continue on with the timeline to the mid-19th century when Japan drank in all she could from the West. Let's begin, shall we?
As much as the higher-ups would like, Miss McKim hasn't lost her status as honorable aunt and still talks with the guards who tell her their concerns about Europe. Mr. Hayakawa seems to have returned to relying on Miss McKim and called her to the guardhouse.
Honorable Aunt, is it true prisoners are betting on when America will invade the Philippines?
I don't know anything about that, Mr. Hayakawa.
When do you think it is going to happen?
Truly, I don't know. When do you think?
Never!
October 5th, 1943. The rainy season is about to end, so the days are lovely, with less and less rain, but still fog, clouds, and mist. October 10, 1943. A gorgeous bag from Nida arrived with 2 pounds of peanut sugar candy, 6 eggs, cigarettes and matches, a grapefruit, and 1 kilo of white sugar. We ate the fried eggs at noon and wondered how Nida is doing.
Hello?
Oh, hi, Auntie.
How are you feeling?
Just fine. What's going on?
I'm worried about the Japanese.
It's just like last year when Americans were doing good and the Japanese got nervous.
I saw soldiers driving tanks up and down Session Street with machine guns.
They're up to their old tricks. Did you read the letter in the Tribune from Colonel Nagahama?
No.
He's asking the guerrillas to turn themselves in. It's just an excuse to start interrogating people. Like those dumb identification tags everyone has to wear.
I hate those chapas.
If you're wearing a Baguio chapa and go to Santa Maria, you'd better have a good reason for being there, or you'll be arrested as a guerrilla.
But it's worse now. Japanese are doing crazy things. They're even taking bolos knives away from the igorots.
You can take a bolo from an igorot. When did they do that?
A few weeks ago when the igorots were celebrating in town, and they still haven't given them back. Igorots can't live without bolos knives. How are they going to cut coconuts and bananas?
I'm praying this won't make Ismael want to join the resistance even more.
Are you still worried about that, Sobrinita?
October 13, 1943. Poor Marge Moole. She's in bed with a malaria attack yesterday. Her son was carried down on a stretcher with the same, and her husband, Bill, still suffers from the effects of polio, but somehow maintains the camp's swimming pool. Because Beatty is in better health, we allow him to swim twice a week. Oh, he loves it. And Bill keeps the water so warm and clean. The new guard, another peasant type, is our latest laugh and annoyance. He constantly barges about in a consuming curiosity, full of ideas and unquenchable spirits.
Oh, he's crossed the line this time. He just crossed the line.
Who?
The new guard, you know,
the big ape.
He wants me to mend his underwear. Can't you do anything, Miss McKim?
I'll talk to Mr. Hayakawa.
Where are those Japanese manners they're all supposed to have?
Not this one. He's just a poor farmer. A lot of the guards come from humble backgrounds.
Yeah, but they know their boundaries with us women. What's with this guy?
I think he's Looney Tunes.
He does seem a bit off.
He's a big ape, that's what he is. So, I fixed his little red wagon. I gave him a needle and thread and told him to sew it himself.
Good for you.
Well, then I left to take a bath. But get this, he was sitting on my bed sewing his BVDs. He just made himself right at home. It took him an hour.
He sat on our bed the other day and used my manicure set to cut his nails.
Well, at least he didn't ask you to do it for him. I'm afraid he's going to start asking me to do other things.
I wouldn't put it past him. That's why I hid till he was gone.
Well, he was sure zigging and zagging from some homebrew when he crashed our party last night. Just sat his big old self down at our table and helped himself to sandwiches and cake. The clodhopper.
Well, be careful what you say around him. He's rough around the edges, but no dope. He's picked up a lot of English and Tagalog.
He's still a hick.
He tried to take me away from a bridge game to do his laundry.
Bet he was no match for you.
Well, when I reminded him that Mr. Hayakawa does not allow us to do such things, he said Mr. Hayakawa is only a civilian, while he is military police.
Oh, I've heard that we outrank civilians line before.
Then he... I still can't believe he did it. But he sprawled across our bridge table, so I went straight to Mr. Hayakawa.
What did Mr. Hayakawa do?
Sent the sergeant over to tell him to go back on duty.
Mr. Hayakawa, our samurai in shining armor.
October 14, 1943. War is in the air once more. If Europe cracks, the Orient will get a body blow, and it won't be long. Most immediately, it is the natives the Japanese fear. Since the Japanese took away their bolo knives, the Igorots are holding meetings about independence. October 15, 1943. Jim Bozeman died suddenly at 1:30, and we are all very sad. Jerry came to second meal with his eyes huge and mournful before the kids joined us. Millie and Ted were there.
It was a coronary thrombosis, Natalie. It lasted 15 minutes before he died.
He wasn't even that old.
There was nothing we could do. God, it was awful to watch Jim convulse while someone ran to get a doctor.
We all saw Dr. Schaefer leaping over the hedges to get to the camp hospital.
His wife said Jim'd complained about a pain in his arm this morning.
Where is she now?
Over at the shop. They carried Jim from the hospital in a black bag. After they finish the coffin, they'll take him for a Catholic burial outside camp.
How old was Jim?
47.
You and Ted must have known him from the army days.
Not really. He shipped to Corregidor in 1920 from Colorado Springs. God, I just can't believe Jim's gone.
There'll be no more wild arguments in the cookhouse.
He was such an ornery son of a gun. I liked him an awful lot.
Yeah, me too.
We used to enjoy listening to Jim's stories about the week of panic before the invasion. What a picture in his salty telling of it. The blowing of refinery tanks with no warning at 2 a.m., followed by a red glare and men pouring up from the tunnels. Jim was also kind and thoughtful. He used to bring me lovely, wild white roses from the mountains when he knew I couldn't go up there and wanted so desperately to go. If you can believe it, one lady, upon hearing news of Jim's death, said characteristically with her face pinched with distress,
"Well, there goes our bridge foursome."
Jerry will miss his friend. October 16, 1943. I suppose it was only a matter of time. Someone came up with a parody of Our Town, renamed it Our Camp, and put on a show last night. It was a riot, full of wonderful lines straight from camp life, the epitome of camp satire and cynicism, and just the tonic we all needed. The last scene, the one where ghosts of the dead in a New England graveyard talk to the living about the meaning of life, made us rock back and forth with laughter. Instead of it being 1910, Our Camp takes place in 1949, 6 years from now. We're still interned at Camp Holmes and are being visited by spirits from the future who've been set free and come back to give us advice about living on the outside.
Who are you?
We are ghosts from the future.
We are internees like you, but have been set free.
When's that gonna happen?
We don't know.
Give you advice to tell you not to worry. You'll get used to being out of prison.
There's no rice and bananas for breakfast on the outside, only steak and eggs.
Why don't you join us? What are you waiting for?
We're waiting for the great offensive. We're waiting for MacArthur to come back.
Never heard of him.
Who's he?
This concludes episode 18. Be sure to tune in for the next episode of Forbidden Diary, the true World War II story of Natalie Crowther, based on her secret journal written from a Japanese prison camp in the Philippines.